Welcome to London Welsh Rugby Club Podcast. This is episode 35. Happy New Year to all the listeners of our wonderful club podcast. As we are now in another lockdown, I do hope you're all staying safe and keeping well. And just a reminder that the club is there for anyone who wants a chat or even some assistance, you just have to get in touch with us. I do hope you can take some comfort in listening to some of the great characters we have in our podcast series to date, which are all available to listen on your podcast provider. We have plenty more to come over the next few weeks, so stay tuned as we try and keep you entertained during these challenging times. Our guest this week is someone who has made a great impression across a couple of seasons he has been in the club. An Irish lad who has shown some promise in his late teens and was part of the Leinster Academy and nearly got into the age grade setup for Ireland, but it wasn't to be. Moving over to the UK, he then found his way to Old Deer Park and found his love of rugby again at London Welsh. Appointed captain in only his second season with us, you couldn't get a more perfect choice. He is someone who clearly excels on the field, is respected by his peers, communicates well with officials, at home in the bar with players and the supporters club, is modest and understands his role with the club. This week's guest is club captain Chris Lilley. Enjoy. This podcast is sponsored by London Welsh Developments. London Welsh Developments offer the entire range of services for all your home needs, from plumbing, electrical, joinery, and building and maintenance. Their many years of experience building all forms of extensions and conversions, the odd new build, and some bespoke garden rooms and home offices. You will clearly see the attention to detail and an understanding of your home that is difficult to match. They really do care and want the best for your home with no stone left unturned. For more information, contact London Welsh Developments on 0208 335 9123 or email on info@lwdltd.co.uk. London Welsh Developments. Welcome to the pod, club captain Chris Lilley. How are you, Chris?
Hey, happy new year. How are you doing? I'm good.
Happy new year. Blwydd yn newydd dda, as some of us say at London Welsh. What's the Irish equivalent?
Oh, you put me on the spot here. Nulla Cunna Dit is Happy Christmas. So let's start with that one.
We'll take that. So how was your Christmas and New Year, Chris?
Yeah, really good, thanks. Really good. A little bit mixed, actually. We had a decent, it's the only time of year in work that the offices kind of shut up shop. So nice to have that break. Ash, my wife, she has been working, she's a nurse, and she's been called over to the ITU to help out with everything kind of COVID related. So we're really looking forward to hopefully getting home for the first time pretty much this year. But yeah, look, with travel restrictions and with numbers spiking, we stayed put in Wimbledon. And look, it was bittersweet. Of course, we would have loved to have been home with family, but it was our first Christmas as a married couple. And yeah, to have it just the two of us in the flat actually was really, really nice. So we got to recharge the batteries.
That's good. But you say it was mixed. I hear you were not well yourself.
Yeah, that probably didn't help either. I caught the virus. I caught COVID. It's about just after our touch tournament, actually, in Old Deer Park. So missed the last kind of few days of work. And it really, it definitely knocks you for six. And for me, I definitely consider myself as lucky. But yeah, for the bones of kind of 10, 12 days, you have no energy, no nothing. And thankfully, I went for my first run the other day. That was all fine. It's just no taste and smell now. So hopefully I'm the home straight.
Well, glad you've come through that. You know, obviously you've had a bit of time off work, but not ideal. But I mean, 2020 was quite an eventful year for the Lilleys. We had a brief chat in the summer, but you managed to get married sort of June, July time. If you just let our listeners know, what were your sort of original plans pre-COVID and how you had to sort of adapt them just to ensure you got married?
Yeah, it is absolutely the best thing we ever did. We had, as so many have had, I suppose, great plans. it was a pretty long engagement. And, you know, from dress fittings to suit fittings to stags, tastings, revisiting venues, all that kind of thing. All of that is kind of put off to the last, you know, kind of 2-3 months. And particularly, we'd planned to get married at home back in Ireland. So we're very limited as to what we could do over here, obviously. Now, the date we'd planned to get married was in June, or the month. And obviously from March, everything locked down. So in Ireland, Ireland have been fantastic, I think, with how they've handled everything. And our venue, Tankardstown, they're absolutely fantastic, and still are. And we essentially, up until probably only like a month before, in theory, as per guidelines, we still could have done it, even at kind of max numbers. But yeah, it got to a stage where we were kind of worried, even if we could do this, would it be right to do so? You know, with 100 odd kind of people, with people traveling, elderly members of the family, all that kind of thing. But right before we kind of made the decision, the government kind of made the decision for us, and kind of all kind of weddings were shut down. Up and I think it was 6 people was the max number we could have. Now Ash, she lives in the school that we went to. Her dad taught me geography, and the obviously schools kind of locked down and things, but there's a church, there's a little chapel kind of on campus, and the priest is her neighbor. So he was obviously with the, it's not a chapel to the public, so he was more than happy to still continue with obviously a very mini ceremony. And with 6 people, we could have our parents and our granny. So we decided to kind of continue on. I had been working as normally, I had not been furloughed at that point. And that brought us right up until the end of May. And at the start of June, I was put on furlough for 2 weeks. That tied in quite nicely with my pre-booked annual leave for the end of the month. So I had the whole month to, well, off essentially. So we booked some earlier flights home. We got to follow the isolation strictly. It was 2 weeks at the time. So we drove out to the west of Ireland. For anyone who has not been to the west of Ireland, it's, you know, so many similarities to Wales and Gowan things. It's absolutely stunning. No reception, no nothing, just wilderness and just the ocean. So it was the best pre-wedding honeymoon the two of us could have had. So 2 weeks in isolation. We drove up to Dublin. I skipped a little bit, but essentially the photographer that we had booked, she put a little thing on online saying that she was taking parties of, you know, 10 to 12. So we just literally 3 days before, are you free? She was, that's fantastic. And 2 days before, they increased the number from 6 to 10 or 8 to 12 or whatever the numbers were. So that just meant that we could have a bridesmaid, two of my best men, or groomsmen, and I think my little cousin or something came. So super small, super intimate. It was in a small chapel, but still big enough that there was meters and meters between everyone. And we had some professional photos of the day, which is, yeah, looking back, yeah, really special. So had popped the iPhone onto Spotify in a little room in the college, in school. Just got a load of little nibbly bits from the shop and tons of booze.
So it was safe to get married and you decided to go ahead with it. Are there plans for a party to celebrate being married for a year or 2 years, whenever you're able to do that, to have more of the extended family there? Or is it just, you know, now that you're married, it seems maybe no point doing that?
No, we, again, going back to Tankardstown, our venue, they were absolutely amazing. Back in June, when we decided to postpone the venue side of things, we actually postponed it to February of this year. That obviously can't go ahead. So a couple of months ago, we just said, look, let's just forget we're married. That's the main thing. But we've obviously kind of paid, you know, deposits and substantial cash for photographers and bands and flowers and the venue, obviously. So all of them have been, you know, so accommodating. And we're just going to shift on for a couple of years, park it, enjoy being married, and hopefully at some stage in a couple of years' time, we can have a bit of a celebration. But it won't be a marriage or wedding. It'll just be a very well-dressed, fancy-looking.
Well, maybe if London Welsh get a couple of promotions, right, we have a tour over to Ireland, we could sort of use that budget then for a sort of like an end of tour, end of season promotion to the national leagues or something. That'd be quite nice thing, wouldn't it?
5-year plan, exactly. Yeah, we can pair it up. You heard it here first.
Then you might get some cash back from the club, which is a good, not bad thing. But you mentioned you were furloughed a little bit. So has a pandemic affected your work? Because you work in an estate agents, don't you?
Yeah, so I work with Marsh & Parsons. I manage the lettings team of one of our offices in Fulham, SW6. So I've been with them for 5 years now, 6 years this summer. At the start, I think I mentioned I had not been placed on furlough for the first 2 months. Pretty much all negotiators had been furloughed. All negotiators were furloughed. And 50% of the management were also furloughed. So that kind of left maybe 12 of us, 13 of us to oversee numerous offices, all working from our flats or home or wherever, and all just kind of doing viewings virtually. I suppose had to kind of have the day-to-day management of the office. That's a huge amount of, not complaints, but I suppose kind of people obviously going through awful, awful situations, not being able to pay rent. And rent in London is not cheap. So we're talking thousands and thousands of pounds. Look, these are calls with tenants and landlords alike. And again, kind of thankfully, I think the one thing 2020 has kind of made me realize is that, you know, we all pulled together. We all kind of knew how difficult this was. And I'm pleased to say there was no kind of money grabbing people who were digging their heels in, which, you know, sounds like a silly thing to say, but unfortunately that is a reality. So that was only affected as such in terms of doing viewings virtually. But since then, agency has been an industry that's been allowed to continue working. So when I came back from the wedding, I think that was start of July, I was back in the office, as were all of the negotiators then.
Okay.
All working locked doors, all still continuing to work virtually on videos. So people renting houses and flats just having not even seen them, essentially. And then month by month, people have been allowed to come out. We've been allowed to drive them around. So it's been similar to our rugby season, I suppose, very kind of topsy-turvy, up and down. We're allowed to do something, then we're kind of reeled back in a bit. So I think we're in tier four at the moment, obviously. So back to work on Monday, and I think it's back to virtual viewings.
So you mentioned sort of the rugby season there, and we'll chat about last season and promotion, but, you know, the first half of the season for you maybe as captain, with training on and off, playing ready for rugby, getting ready for league fixtures in January, then, it all seems to be off now. How has that affected sort of morale in the squad, do you think? What's been going on?
I'd be lying if I said it's not been difficult, if it's not been frustrating. It has. And it's for everyone involved, everyone who loves the sport, everyone who loves the club. And I think even the new players, we had a huge recruitment drive this kind of off season, and we've brought in some incredible kind of new guys, and I'm dying for them to play in Alder Park to kind of pull on the jersey. So it has been tough, but I think as a team and as a club collectively, we've all stuck together. I'd be very, very surprised if there'd be very many other clubs in London who still have the numbers that we have turning up on a Tuesday and Thursday, even kind of in December, in the pits of December when it was cold and wet, when essentially, let's be honest, we've got nothing to play for. And, you know, the kind of, again, progressing and then taking two steps back and going forward. We thought it might be November that a league would start. Then we had a proposal for maybe December, kind of limited fixtures. Then there was a, I think, chat of like a conference league if it started in February. So all these carrots dangled in front of you, all this hard work. Will Taylor certainly has not been kind of taking the foot off the gas. So we got in a really good shape and unfortunately kind of pulled back, but the morale's been kept high. We've had a few socially distant things as a club that we can still kind of grow as a team and develop and things. So look, if it's in a month's time or if it is next season, I'm just looking forward to having our new team kind of run out in front of our supporters again.
Yeah, fingers crossed that can happen, you know, maybe March time when the weather gets better and more people are vaccinated and we can have some fixtures. It'd be great to have something just, you know, even if they're friendlies, just to play some games in the modified laws. But look, you ended your season playing at our sort of Ready for Rugby club day. Did you enjoy playing with our Colts, our women, our touch rugby dads and players? Because, you know, for them, I'm sure it's great playing, you know, with the club captain and first team players. But for someone like yourself, did you enjoy the day?
Absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And we're blessed as a club to have the facilities to be able to kind of organise something like that. And hats off to everyone who's kind of given up and surrendered a bit of time and their efforts to arrange such a good day. You kind of touched on it, but yeah, kind of mixing the teams between, you know, for those who don't know, kind of Colts and things, you know, boys and girls that are maybe 15, 16 years and up, through the senior kind of levels and the women's team. And I think Team Tinsel won. I think I have a winning medal in my back pocket. But yeah, with, you know, supporters coming out and on the terrace supporting us, the refs yourself, giving up your time to kind of help out. But the best thing I think was seeing Ushin throwing a few dummies and pass out the back door. He was on Team Tinsel.
He enjoyed himself, definitely being, that's my youngest boy. He's probably not, well, he's under 18 definitely, but he's not in the under 18s, but he enjoyed playing certainly. And as all the refs did, like, you know, I think it's just to have everyone playing, and mixed in socially distance off the pitch, but that sort of thing. So when COVID's over, this is something I'm sure the club would love to continue, because it's a great way to, I suppose, build relationships with different people across the club, really, isn't it?
100%. And to see, you know, going by your son again, you know, a young lad, obviously very talented, nervous at the start, but to see him throwing dummies and pass out the back door and scoring tries after the third or fourth game, you know, and high fives from all the teams, all ages, it was just brilliant. And you also get to wear some of the kit from some of the pro days as well, some of the cool jerseys and stuff. I don't know, just the whole thing was, yeah, really special, really fun.
It's good, and we'll definitely repeat that when it's in safer times. But look, I want to go back to the beginning, really, for when your rugby journey started. When did you start playing, and was there sort of any rugby in your family, either from your parents or uncles, that sort of thing?
Not at all. My dad is English. Mum's Irish. So I was born in Ireland, and flew essentially as a newborn. Mum flew us back to England for a few years. So my parents have split up. When I came back to Ireland, I think it was six, maybe seven. Yeah, new school, new friends, all that kind of thing. And down in Wexford, which is southeast of Ireland, it's about an hour south of Dublin, like kind of football would be bigger. It's just rugby's not really a huge thing, or wasn't anyway. So when the kind of primary school I went to, football was the main sport. I remember trying rugby in Gorey rugby football club. I absolutely hated it. Big old baggy jerseys, a gum shield didn't fit me, and I think I was popped as a hooker or something. Just didn't enjoy it, really, to be honest. So it started off for me in secondary school, so it would have been about 11. And the main two sports there were hockey and rugby, and you just had to play. My year in school, it's very lucky, actually, just from a group, all very, very close, but also from a sports point of view, we're just really good. it was by no means at all rugby school. Probably opposite. If you, anything to do with rugby, you just would not go to my school. But yeah, from kind of 12 years on, just fell in love with it. Like I said, you had to play, and it was training every week and matches at the weekends. But when you're playing something that you love with a bunch of mates that you're super close to, winning a couple of fixtures back then was just a bonus. But that was kind of when it first started for me, so probably later than most.
I think a lot of people take up the sport over here, you know, 11 and 12, but I think, you know, is it more about school rugby than club rugby when you're growing up in Ireland? And does that obviously then switch then to other allegiances once you get to sort of senior rugby?
Yeah, schools rugby at home is huge. Yeah, like really, really big. And there's a few different kind of tiers. I suppose kind of speaking more specifically about kind of Leinster and even more specifically, again, Dublin. You have kind of tiered school level. So we would have been in probably like the lowest tiers, like the third tier. Whereas when you get into, I don't know if you've heard of any of these, but say like Black Rock, St. Michael's, St. Mary's, Belvedere, they're all in the highest. And they would be, you know, when it kind of boils down to politics and things, they're the schools that the scouts and things go to watch. But their cup fixtures are all televised, huge fixtures. And it's just a very, very big following.
So if you're in tier three as a school, right, you only play against other tier three schools, yeah? And tier two against tier two, tier one. So let's move that on forward a little bit. You then were in the Leinster age grade. How come that happened if you're in tier three? So the scouts must have seen you, but you had no option but to stay at school and play at tier three level, even though you're in the Leinster and the 16 and the 18s. Is that right?
Yeah. So we had kind of getting into it. So the school I went to was St. Columba's College. And you know, obviously the highest tier has its setup and things, but we still had a Leinster set up for our tier. So at the youngest, I think the first kind of representative level you can kind of play, it's when you're maybe 16, 17. And for us, that was called Leinster A Schools. So that was the B team of the Leinster Schools, if you like.
Yeah.
So I had that for, I think, two representative seasons. And kind of based on my performance, I was lucky enough, along with one or two of my friends, to be scouted for the actual Leinster schools. When we get into my senior years of school, I think I mentioned that our team was just very good. We won our league in our tier. We won our cup in our tier. And as a result, we got promoted up to compete in the next one. We got to the semi-finals of the second tier, and as a result got qualified up to the top tier, it's kind of unheard of, actually. And it was a massive deal for us at the time, because we were playing against schools which, you know, we didn't have gyms, we didn't take these protein shake things, we didn't do all that. We were just a tiny, tiny team, and I'd love to show a photo of our team versus who we were playing. They're all on average, I'd say, about 15 stone heavier or 15 kilos heavier and maybe about a foot taller. It was just literally David versus Goliath. It was brilliant. But I suppose kind of reeling it back to the kind of representative level, based on kind of performances, based on, you know, potentially scouts seeing these kind of games, I guess, versus bigger schools, I was fortunate enough to kind of make my way up through the lower Leinster representatives, if you can call it that, up to the kind of more recognised ones.
So then you're in Leinster under 18s, and then is it then into Leinster under 20s? So the pathway from there then trying to get a professional contract, was that your goal really within Leinster, to try and win a contract and be a pro player?
Yeah, 100%. I kind of going back to like some of the politics and things, the people I was, say, up against or training with or going to these camps with, these were guys who I suppose, kind of families were sending their kids to these schools to be rugby players. So to be kind of selected in the mix with some of these guys, for me, just didn't really make sense. I didn't really get it. I still don't believe, I'm not a naturally talented rugby player. I just really, really enjoy it, and I'll just try hard to be good. And anything I'm not good at, I'm not afraid to ask a question. I like constructive criticism, so we'll work hard at it. Whereas I suppose maybe some of the lads who, not that it's handed to them, but for some of the guys who've always played rugby and perhaps they took it for granted a bit, I guess, I don't know. So I think I worked harder than some of these guys in the larger schools. So yeah, I don't know. It's a funny one. But the Leinster 19s, 20s, that's when stuff started getting kind of really serious. And from the I think it's the Leinster 19s, I was selected for the what's called the Sub Academy. And that was set up a year or two before as like a natural stepping stone, like a natural filter into the actual academy. Just getting us into regular training, regular gym, regular programs, nutrition, physio, it was all kind of there for us. And I suppose, again, just remembering I was tiny and had not really competed at a decent level throughout school. So just if you were to plonk a player like me into the actual academy where you're training with, say, Ethan Nisiwa or Brian O'Driscoll and Gordon Darcy, all those players at the time, would have been ludicrous. So to give us 2 years to get some kind of body function kind of training, just what an overhead squat is, what a power clean, you know, vague understanding of kind of that kind of skill set is very important, I think, but also I think why Leinster is able to put out so many kind of young teams at the moment at such a high level.
They're very strong as a club, aren't they? As a district. Not, I don't see them as a club, as a district really, because it's all around Dublin and all those schools feeding into Leinster. So did you play games then for Leinster against other academies like the Munsters, the Ulsters,
yeah,
like Connacht, that sort of thing, yeah?
Yeah, 100%. So it's the kind of it's an inter-provincial championship, and it's what you have every year, and that's through the age grade. So even in the Leinster A schools, we would have played against Connacht and Munster. And as you get to the older, more professional setup, you play all three of the other provinces. And at 19s and 20s, we won. So we, whatever way the fixtures work, you know, you have home and away, whatever way the year falls. But yeah, you play against Munster 20s, you play against Connacht under 20s and Ulster under 20s. And Leinster, it's the biggest province in Ireland. But, you know, it's always deemed to be kind of be the strongest province. And I think the year we won it at 20s, it was the fifth year in a row or something. So, you know, the pressure is there that you need to deliver. But in the back of your mind also at the time anyway, based on that performance, at that time of year, you have the Junior World Cup as well then. But before that is obviously the Six Nations. So based on the Leinster's performance or our team's performance, more often than not, that will kind of entail who's selected for Six Nations and perhaps then kind of Junior World Cup. So to win that put us in a good standpoint.
So speaking of Six Nations, do you then had a trial for Ireland in the 20s, didn't you? And challenge for Six Nations squad place for under 20s. You didn't quite make it. But what was the feedback you received? And at that stage, did it feel like your chance had gone, or were they just like, you know, there'll be other opportunities for you, you thought?
So one thing I actually didn't mention. So throughout all of school, I'd say for a majority of my rugby career up until that point, I'd been at scrum half. I'm about 6'1", just under. So it's a very tall scrum half. So any opposite number I came up against, I normally was quite good in comparison. So probably hence why I was being selected for some of these teams. But when it got to Leinster 20s, kind of midway through the kind of pre-season, they shifted us to the wing. a real last minute shift. I'd never played there before. And it was on that position that I was starting and that we won the Inter Pros that year. So when I got the first, I got a call up to the Irish 20s camp for the Six Nations as a winger. And yeah, I was on cloud nine. Again, huge disbelief because it was a position I was relatively new at, but I was in a really good team, and I've always, it's no secret. If a winger is scoring all the tries and the back line is doing well, you know, it's just good rugby. And I was kind of benefiting from just a load of good players around us. So yeah, the best experience, it was very short lived, but it was the one real snapshot I got at what I was hoping my career would be. Hugely professional, everything there for us, all the fancy kit, you know, acupuncture just because I wanted it, back, you know, all this kind of stuff. And it was in, the K Club, I think it was the K Club. Again, just a really nice kind of hotel venue. And we had a trial game. I remember, I think it was just against each other. And I remember making, I think it was just one mistake. I think I was, my positioning was too deep at the time, and missed a kick or something like that, you know, rather than kind of catching it. And yeah, went back to the sub academy that after the weekend, had our gym sessions, and just lads were getting texts around us. Oh, we're going next week. Oh, are you doing this? Are you going to the next camp? I just never got the message. And I think the next day kind of realized, oh, bloody hell, I don't think I'm being called back here. And a guy, a good friend of mine, who I'd been selected in front of him, he got a text and he was called up. So yeah, it was really tough. I didn't think it was all over at that stage. And just knew I had to kind of keep the head down, keep working, and just kind of keep performing at kind of club level. But the guy who got called up instead of us, yeah, he took his chance. He did really well. And the longer time went on, when the Six Nations came and went, that was when I kind of knew that, you know, you're not going to be selected to go play in the World Cup if you're not kind of represented, you know, Six Nations level. So that's when I started to kind of start making a few decisions and kind of speak with some of the coaches and stuff. So it's tough to take, but that's sport, isn't it?
It is, but it's quite blunt for a young lad growing up who's like looking to, you know, develop as a rugby player, and to get no feedback or no conversation, just nothing, is not maybe the ideal way to encourage someone to develop, because it's a late developing sport as well, rugby, and people can improve, and you know that disappointment could have fueled your fire to make it somewhere else. But look, you know, you were still in the Leinster under 20s. I'm potentially trying to get a Leinster contract. So what happens there, Chris? You know, because obviously you got to think about your education as well as your rugby. So had you left school then, and then what were you doing?
So I was playing club rugby at the time with UCD, University College Dublin. And I was on a rugby scholarship there. When I'd left school, so what, like 18 years old, I'd applied for a scholarship to UCD and I'd applied for a scholarship to Trinity. Two of just for whatever you want to go study, I suppose, but two good colleges in Dublin. Now I chose the scholarship for UCD, probably for the wrong reasons. Again, all in hindsight, we're you know, vision's 2020. But a lot of my friends from the sub academy had also received a scholarship there, so just kind of familiarity of who would be playing with. They had a fantastic facilities. It was kind of closer, only marginally, but closer to where I was living at the time. Brian O'Driscoll went to UCD, so I thought that was a big deal. So yeah, like, but again, because a load of talent and a load of the team went to UCD, at scrum half, game time for me was kind of minimal. So the scrum half ahead of me was John Cooney. He now plays for Ulster in Ireland.
Yeah, he's not a bad player, is he?
Not bad, yeah. So, look, he was super. Again, we got on very well, and we were doing all our training in the Leinster sub-academy and things together, and we'd have training at UCD, etc. And again, back to the feedback from the Leinster side of things was great, as, you know, kind of working this. There's nothing, I suppose, directly from the Irish camp, but, you know, that's maybe how these things work, kind of fed down through. But when I needed to go back to club level and start performing, you know, behind John, I wasn't getting a huge amount. So again, in hindsight, if I'd gone to Trinity, maybe things would have been different. And I subsequently, on the advice of the sub academy, changed club and went to St. Mary's. And yeah, began playing week in, week out. And yeah, look, obviously, you know, your game improves kind of pretty quickly, pretty dramatically. But perhaps it's just obviously a little bit too little, too late. So kind of very, very long-winded answer, but in response to your question, when you don't make the Six Nations, you're probably not going to make the World Cup. When you don't make the World Cup, you're not going to be offered an academy spot, like a full academy spot, which is your professional contract. So I decided to... I had a shoulder injury. It's like a recurring dislocation, a subluxation, it's called. So at the end of April, early May, I had the operation on my shoulder. And yeah, just chose that to be the time. Look, let's draw a line in the sand. Let's see what happens. But you just need this operation if you want to continue playing at a decent level. And I thought I'd take those summer months to kind of rehab and everything. And I suppose kind of, if I'm going to be really bitter, the winger that went out to the World Cup, he got injured in the first game. And this fella who's a couple of wings, I suppose kind of wingers behind us, he was called out instead because I was in a sling, obviously in hospital. And he got two tries against Samoa and was offered a place. But yeah, look, there's so many things that could have worked out, and you know, it still could have come to the same conclusion. So who knows?
Yeah, so with that then, so you're at St. Mary's. Does that mean so Leinster sort of days were over as well then, that under 20 sort of thing? And then you sat down, you then started playing. Was it under 20 for St. Mary's, or was it that senior rugby as well?
Under 20s. So yeah, look, Leinster's done then. Once that kind of second year of a 2-year cycle finishes, when you're kind of 20 years old, or you know, 19, whatever it was, you're not offered academy, so it's kind of, you know, thanks for coming. So it was all solely kind of club rugby. Played under 20s with St. Mary's. I captained the under 20 side. So that was great. We won our league, the JP Flanagan. That hadn't been won before, so that was a huge, yeah, just a really good achievement for the club, for our team.
And would that under 20 league be across the whole of Ireland, or would it be a Dublin under 20 league?
It was Dublin, kind of like Leinster kind of teams.
Yeah.
Now we entered into an All Ireland Cup as well. We got to the semi-finals but lost. But again, that was a nice little snippet because you're still playing against, you know, academy players who are just on the fringes. Perhaps they're coming back from injury and they're just looking for game time. So the standard is still very high, particularly in that All-Ireland Cup. And also when you're playing, you know, different provinces, it's just some pretty different styles of rugby as well. But so that was that. And I suppose kind of after 20s, then go into kind of senior teams. St. Mary's at the time would have been, so the All-Ireland League in at home, kind of names on the tin, it's the league of all of Ireland, and Mary's were in the top league for that, 1A, and they had been a team that had just been together for years and years and years, and had got to finals and lost, and as I was joining, it was really reaching that kind of pinnacle of its kind of success. So I got to play with some great guys who they themselves had maybe gone through academy paths or professional and kind of teams over in England and things. So yeah, to kind of play with some of those or kind of learn from them as well, I guess. Still as a, you know, a young player, it was brilliant. And in 2012, we actually won that league.
So what sort of crowds would they get there? Because obviously, you know, everyone this side of the shore who, you know, will think of just the four provinces, they know about the academies, they don't really understand sort of the structure below that. And, you know, and obviously all these, like St Mary's, if you're doing well there, I'm sure the Leicester scouts will be there saying they'll come back and have a look at you again. But, the quality must be quite high in that league. And is it equivalent to like a national one over here, do you think? Like the third tier of rugby?
I'd say so. Now the All Ireland League, so at club level, so in Ireland you have obviously like the Pro 14, you'd have A teams off of those, and then pretty much it's club rugby that, you know, that's it. So, you know, a few of the guys, even at the kind of maybe the end of their careers, if there's a scout of the game or if someone is playing consistently well for a particular season, they might get a call up for a cap, or they might get a call up for, you know, during Six Nations or something when numbers are kind of slightly tighter. So that is, it's pretty much it. The highest level of club rugby is the filter into the professional setup. And again, you know, after off the back of our success, Dara Fanning, he was a big, tall, ginger winger, and he got a Leinster contract and went back as a pro. I think he had a small stint in Connacht. But yeah, so it's a decent level. There's a decent supporting. You know, admittedly, and I'm not just saying this because we're on the London Welsh podcast, you wouldn't have the kind of numbers that you'd have at Old Deer Park for some of our games, on say the wet and windy days. But in that 2012 season, that was, I think the whole club knew that was something special. It was building just on the teams that were overturning, because it's home and away, and you can't travel down to Munster and just get an easy win, or travel at some teams in Connacht. So when we got some of these fixtures on the, or some results on the road, the crowds naturally started getting bigger and bigger, and the final's televised. You know, it's a big deal.
So if the crowds are not the same, but I suppose, you know,
not too consistently.
Pardon?
I say not consistently the same.
It's the standard rugby. Just to wrap up on your Irish part of your rugby career, you know, in terms of, you've mentioned the Ulster scrum half, Cooney, but who else was sort of in your sort of peer group that you were playing against, either, you know, at schoolboy level or in the 20s? Who were sort of, because you're 28, 29 sort of now, are you, Chris?
The big 3-0, unfortunately, yeah. 30. No, so I was like Simon Zeebo. Would have been the winger I was competing for. He's obviously kind of wrestling now. Cooney, the scrum half. Reese Ruddock, plays for Leinster Ireland. He's actually younger than me, even though he's enormous.
And he's Welsh.
Yeah, he's Welsh as well. Yes, indeed. Andrew Conway, another winger. He's down in Munster at the moment with Ireland. And it's all kind of those kind of groups. A few others went on, not to the highest level of kind of international, but... Or Tyke Furlong, he was a young lad coming through. Mm-hmm. Funny story about him, actually. He was under 17s, I think, when I was maybe 20 or so. And the coaches were just whispering out this new young lad from the country. And apparently at that age, when scrummaging down, he used to stare at his prop in front of him. And in the biggest culty kind of country accent, he'd say, "Boy, this tractor does not have reverse." And then he'd plow through them all every single time. So he was snapped up quick enough.
Sure he was.
The final name, I've mentioned this till my face is blue in the club, but Ian McKinley, at school level, Ian McKinley, I played with him. He's one of my best mates. He's one of my groomsmen. But Ian played at Irish 20s level, went to the World Cup. He had caps for Leinster, but suffered a really horrific injury, I went out to coach in Italy. And if some may or may not know, but he obviously came back into playing rugby, even with the injury, and represented Italy wearing goggles.
Yeah.
As protected everywhere. But yeah, that's definitely the biggest name in terms of who I've played with, and lucky to come one of my best mates.
That's great. There's like so many fond memories of like playing rugby with your mates, and you know, at such a great standard. But you've made some senior rugby appearances for St Mary's. At what point did you decide to come over to the UK then, to find work or love or whatever, travel?
Yeah, so club rugby was the level. You know, what am I now? Kind of 22, 23. Am I going to be a pro player? No, I'm not. Had to kind of focus on a job, on income, and just kind of the next steps, I guess. Ash and I were together at this stage, I think. She was over in London, so she's a nurse, as I touched on, and finished her studies, graduated, all that kind of thing. And there was no kind of jobs being offered in Ireland at all. So her and all of her mates kind of flew over, applied, and had jobs offered to them. So we did long distance for probably the bones of 18 months, maybe 2 years, which wasn't ideal, to be honest. and yeah, look, it kind of got to a stage where, you know, what's going to happen? And she was pursuing her work over here, obviously. So I just decided to kind of come on over. I thought it'd be for a year, truthfully. Kind of 5 years on, I'm still here. But I've loved it. I took a break from rugby. When I first came over, I still wanted to play. And I had a couple of months with Richmond. Literally like 2 months, I hurt my ankle and began working weekends in work. So just kind of had to knock that on the head because, they took it extremely seriously. And if I can't commit to something properly, I don't really want to do it or kind of let a team down, I guess. So just parked it. I was a little bit unfit, I was getting a bit out of shape, and with injuries and stuff, I just thought, look, I'm working weekends, let's just knuckle down on a London career. And after probably a year or two, one of my friends in work, Sam Canning-Birtles, he'd been down at London Welsh for a season and was always, you know, praising and singing about the club and how great it is and come on down and all that kind of thing. So came down three pre-seasons ago, I think three seasons ago, down to Pools in the park. And literally from the first kind of session, just loved it. And it was good numbers, the coaching, just everything about it. And I think in comparison to Richmond aside, apart in comparison to, you know, some just kind of social rugby I'd kind of played, the standard was like night and day. It was head and shoulders above anything else I'd seen or witnessed or whatever in London. And look, back then, of course, we weren't playing at the highest league ever, but what we expected of ourselves and what the coaches expected of us and, you know, some of the talent individually, but collectively was just brilliant. And never looked back since.
I bet you missed it then, your rugby, having not played it for a couple of years. So you came to us then the season after we won Hearts Middlesex 1. So we're in London Northwest 3. So yes. Sam had encouraged you to come, and we haven't seen Sam since, have we?
Sam is awesome at his job. Oh. I think my first season, he could play kind of home fixtures. But like I said, he's kind of working Saturdays. Yeah. He just can't commit as much. It was a lot of fun. And I kind of touched on the ambition, and I kind of touched on kind of the talent that I kind of noticed amongst players and that. But of course, the warm welcoming, of course, all that goes without say. But the coaching we were getting was just brilliant. And I didn't know necessarily at the time, but to then find out that you're being coached by ex-pros, and to kind of take on these pearls of wisdom from lads who've done it, who've experienced it, just really sunk in with me. And again,
you must have experienced that though at Leinster though, yeah, and St Mary's, having that sort of quality coaching environment.
100%, of course, but at this kind of at a lower level,
yeah,
and to have the facilities that we have on offer in at London Welsh, and to have, and you know, again, to get this from, you know, Kai, obviously kind of, you know, director of rugby. We had like a designated backs coach, you know, Tom May was helping out at the time. You know, it was brilliant, really, really good. And then obviously Will, you know, with all the kind of strength and conditioning and the fitness and stuff, everyone just kind of bought into it. So yeah, we're very, very lucky. So kind of realized that I'd kind of stumbled across via Sam, a bit of a gold mine here. So thought I'd stay and see what it was about. And yeah, obviously a couple of promotions later, here we are.
I know. So how easy was it for a foreigner like yourself to forge friendships at London Welsh then? Was it? I'm actually taking foreigners as a little joke there, Chris, but as a such one, just new to the club, coming in and, you know, into that environment. I suppose we've had quite a few new players. So was it quite easy then to mingle and to make friendships, I suppose?
Yeah. Like I definitely missed the camaraderie. I definitely missed, you know, just training with a bunch of lads, you know, the changing room, you know, all that kind of thing. I definitely missed just speaking to members, speaking to supporters, have a pint or, you know, have a chat afterwards. Missed all of that. And, you know, with Old Deer Park and with London Welsh being as welcoming as it is, and with the supporters that we have, anyone is welcome and anyone fits in very, very quickly.
What were your memories of that first season then, Chris? Because, you know, we're in Northwest 3. So, you know, what do you remember that first season?
I remember losing that one game. I think it was Stevenage, and that really ruffled me up. Because I think that was the only game we lost that year. Was that the year that we had the draw, the 0-0? I can't remember.
Against Streetonians, possibly, yeah, 0-0, yeah.
But look, I just remember it seeming to kind of fit in quite quickly. Now, whether others felt that way or not, I don't know about me, but I just felt welcomed. I didn't feel like a new guy. And I just, London Welsh definitely kind of sparked a love of, you know, rugby again for me.
It's good to hear that. Because look, in your first six appearances, you played across five different positions, I think, in your first experience. Yeah. And obviously, you play scrum half and you've played wing, but you've mostly played centre. Is that right for London Welsh?
Yeah, I've played in the centre. I've played, wing and fullback. I think I played in the back row for the tail end of one match. I'm definitely not a natural rugby player. I just love the game. I just love getting stuck in. And if I find out I'm playing in a different position, you know, a week before, I'll just kind of try and pick Tom May or Shings' brain or something, just to make sure that I'm doing the basics. I don't think we had the same starting backline for too many fixtures that first year, but yeah.
No, but you were in the backline that, and you scored a hat trick in the 117-0 win at Verulamians in March.
Verulamians.
Yeah.
Yes, 113-0, yeah, or whatever it was. It was, again, a bit of a free-for-all. If you weren't getting a hat-trick, I think that's almost a bad performance. Bless them there.
You're the only one getting a hat-trick. I was on the club Twitter account that day, and I got RSI to type down all the scorers all the time. It's actually every 2 minutes is a try. It's ridiculous. Look, that's the first season done and dusted. We won. And then you made club captain. What did that, you know, was that a surprise to you, Chris? Or is that something, I don't say you expected, but you felt like with performances and sort of your leadership role you had in the team, you thought it's something you may have got? I don't know.
I was speechless. It was very, very privileged, very honoured. I think I might even ask Kai if he was sure. And it's definitely something I didn't want to or hope I haven't taken for granted. It was all very quick, was over the moon. I think it just, yeah, anyway, it was definitely not expected. I had captained probably the tail end of my first season. Lloydie, who was captain, he got injured. And Kai took over the captaincy for a couple of fixtures. And I don't know if he's injured for a match. He just asked, would I do it? And I said I would. And kind of captained a few from there, but certainly was not expecting come the second season to be asked to be captain for the whole season. But it was, yeah, a huge honour. And I think Will Taylor texted us just saying, oh, your name's going to go on the board. And Loey kind of asked what my middle initial was and stuff. But seeing Loey sent me a picture, and that was, you know, I was literally like a Cheshire cat. Because that properly sunk in. Because yeah, it's a club with so much history. I'm still learning about tons of it, and this is why I love speaking to so many supporters and things. But to be able to play in this little part of the club's history, in this little chapter of our kind of rebuild plan, is very, very special. And very privileged, very happy.
And what do you see as your role, so on and off the pitch as a captain? What do you see? You know, what have they asked of you? You know, in terms of on the pitch, and what do you see as off the pitch?
On the pitch, like for me, to be honest, I don't really like to. And some of the guys might laugh if I say this, but I try not to speak for the sake of speaking. I just don't see the point. I think it loses. Loses its whatever I'm trying to say, it loses its effect or its meaning. And there's so many natural leaders on the team as well. You know, I think as a team, we try and make decisions on the pitch and try and come to that and achieve it together. Look, there's someone with a C beside the name on the score on the, you know, team sheet and that kind of thing. And if there's a big call or if you got points or something, of course, you know, kind of step up for that. And if things aren't going right, or if I don't think we're working hard enough, or I think we can do better, you know, I'll make my thoughts known. And that's more so kind of on the pitch. Off the pitch, and this kind of, I suppose, more so last season, off the pitch, yeah, I think there's an element of kind of responsibility and kind of facing up, keeping, you know, need to kind of keep, show that you kind of presentable, polite, you know, all that kind of thing. And not just kind of be, you know, straight arming pints with the lads topless upstairs or anything. But I think the biggest thing for me this season is, with us not playing, I still have that responsibility. I still have, you know, like the name of kind of club captain. And in a season where we're not playing rugby, that doesn't just mean I can kind of sit back. And I think that's the hardest thing, because you want to try and help, you want to try and do things for the club, which we're playing for, but we just can't as much. And I think that's the hardest part, because, you know, someone's going to take on captaincy sometime in the future, you know, even from next season. So I just want to make sure that whilst I have my time here, that I do what I can for the club and just have a little impact to leave the position in a better place, and then the next person can do theirs. So that's just the only tricky thing for this year. Hopefully we do get to play a bit of rugby.
Well, yeah, fingers crossed. But looking at sort of the end of last season, we promoted again from London 2 into London South 1. What were your highlights of that your sort of first season as captain, shall we say, or first two-thirds of a season?
Biggest things, again, our success. I think that the biggest thing for us at the moment, this current squad, is every single fixture that we win, just a target gets bigger and bigger on our back, and more do people look to the fixture of London Welsh, and they really, really target it. I've been sent so many screenshots from different team WhatsApp groups and different clubs and things kind of saying, this is our cup final, you know, London Welsh in Old Oak Park. Let's really get that scalp. Let's turn them over. And yeah, many have tried and many have failed. So to keep succeeding and to keep the concentration, the drive, the work rate, week in, week out, I think it's really impressive. I really do think that's impressive. And that's a credit to the coaches and the players. And again, you've touched on with the chopping and changing teams and backlines and things. That's not just 15 lads. That's a squad effort, a club effort. The England-Wales day, that was awesome. At the weekend, I'd heard about that. That was my first one, first of many, hopefully. But what a couple of days that was. And yeah, the big marquee in Alder Park. A brief interview, again, speaking in front of the kind of marquee of people was pretty special. It was good fun.
Yeah, it's mad to think that that weekend, it seems like 3 or 4 years ago, doesn't it? But it was only 10 months ago. But you know, but I'm sure a lot of you players, knowing what you know now, wish you'd have all played in that game on the Saturday.
Mad, absolutely mad. Just even seeing, you know, videos and pictures on the Instagram and Twitter accounts of the choir singing and everyone there having a good time watching the big screens. It seems like a lifetime ago. And yeah, hopefully by this time next year, everything will be fine again for us. But yeah.
No, fingers crossed. So you've made 37 appearances for London Welsh in the sort of two years you've been with us. So that's probably looks like you've been playing every game by all accounts. You made a debut against Kilburn Cosmos at ODP. Do you know how many tries you scored in those 37 appearances?
I had a good old run last season before it was called off. So probably be close. It's probably 16 or 17, is it?
Yeah, you got 19 tries in total. But yeah, you were top try scorer last season with 11 tries in 17 games and 8 in your last 7, which is not bad. Not bad. So I think you, I suppose you and Ellis and Rodri and Reece Howell are sort of the next four players probably in line for the 50 capper. You know, but obviously with increased competition for places, whenever our season does commence, it'll be interesting to see who gets there first, really. But I thought so we discussed a bit about when rugby might come back. But what are the coaches saying to you? You know, obviously it's been Christmas now, you've had a bit of time off. Have the coaches been in touch with you at all about the next couple of months, or are you just all waiting to hear from them?
No, I spoke with Kai a bit just before Christmas. Just about kind of plans and what we can kind of do. We've got a mini leadership group with a few of the guys as well. Just to make sure that we're getting a few voices from different positions and different players. And that's, you know, old and new. Because, yeah, I think that's really important. It's not just kind of one person say, or it's not just the coaches say. Again, it's so tricky. We've put so many plans in place, and then a week later, it's just completely pulled out from beneath us, or does a complete U-turn. But again, it hasn't really seemed to phase us. You know, the cold, wet weather is gone now, so look, training might not be for another couple of weeks. But I know that when we do, with conditions always coming in our favour, if we can get a few games under our belt, I know that we've had Shing sent like press-up challenges over the Christmas break, so I know that we're keeping in some kind of shape so that it won't be a total shock to the system when Will Taylor first says, right, head to the try line, here we go. So hopefully we'll be okay.
Well, look, I think the key thing really is that we've got all these new players who've come to the club. We keep them engaged, and somehow, you know, across March, April, May, we get a few games in, and then the coaching team can have a look at some of the new players. And the games, I won't say they're meaningless, but they don't relate to any league. And then we get a proper pre-season, hopefully, and we can attack 2021 season with vigour, knowing maybe a bit more about the squad and, you know, who might be our best team. Because sometimes it takes nearly, you know, a third of a season to decide that. But this time we can do it and hit the ground running potentially, which would be quite exciting for us, wouldn't it?
100%. Again, with the amount of new lads that we've taken in, that there's so many exciting potential pairings, combinations, backlines, starting packs, you know, whatever it is. So you've absolutely nailed it on the head. We have to see this as a positive. We have to use this time wisely. Look, even if we have one friendly, three friendlies, there's no way we'll take it as a friendly. I think we're a competitive bunch, so we'll be playing it like a full-on cup final, I'm sure. But if we can use these next 3 or 4 months to get our kind of structure, our game plan, everyone knows it like the back of their hand. And look, if it means that we'll just use this time to prep us for next season, so be it. But it just means that we will 100% be hitting the ground running come then, hopefully with a clear idea of potentially a starting 15. But that'll be a really, really big headache for the coaches.
I'm sure it will. So what does 2021 have in store for you, Chris, do you think? You know, so whether personally from a London Welsh perspective or just, you know, in terms of your own life, what do you hope to achieve in 2021?
I'm definitely someone who works towards a target. I'm definitely someone who works towards a goal. If I don't do that, I keep putting it on the long finger and I keep putting it off. So I'm trying to come up with like a personal kind of challenge for the summer, not rugby related, but yeah, just logistically seeing if it's just ludicrous or fine. But yeah, kind of rugby wise, just keep working, just keep chipping away. You know, I think when it does come about, the RFU will just kind of say, you know, you can start playing from next month. So we do need to be ready. We do need to be kind of switched on. So naturally kind of keep on top of that with the guys and Kai and Shings and stuff best we can. But apart from that, it's so many plans for rugby and, you know, just myself and Ash and stuff last year. And again, obviously as thousands, as everyone out there, just none of it came to fruition. So I don't want to make too many plans to then have them potentially kind of swiped away. So I'm definitely going to try and make the most of each day. It's every 24 hours, just make the most of it and try and take something off.
That's not a bad place to be. And just to wrap up, so what is, you know, you're new to London Welsh, but, you know, and you've been with us a couple of years now. What does being part of the London Welsh family mean to you, Chris?
I think it means an absolute huge amount, but I do think that in years to come, I'll look back and appreciate it even more still. Again, like I said, I'm still learning so many different names and the history of players and what went on at different stages in different years, and hearing that from so many different perspectives as well, from older and younger members. So I can't wait. I'm looking forward to continuing as a player, and will continue playing as long as I can. But I'm looking forward to coming back and hopefully trying to give back to the club from a member perspective as well, and helping it get back to a level that the club and we all want to get to, you know, whatever that may be. I'm looking forward to, I suppose, just being a supporter and watching the next kind of young lads, maybe Oisin, running out and having a pint with us, you know, afterwards with the choir. I don't know, it's such a special place, and to be a part of it in this kind of chapter of its history is very, very special. But like I said, I think I'm going to look back on this and just smile fondly.
Chris, don't write your playing career off too soon, okay? Still delivering for London Welsh, and that's what we all want to see as supporters, is you as our captain running out for a few more years yet. So remember, you're a long time retired, so keep playing, right? And keep driving the standards and doing the great job that you're doing for our club. So really appreciate it. We wish you a happy new year and a healthy new year to you and Ashley, and hope to see you on the pitch soon. But thank you very much, Chris.
Very, very many happy returns. And here's hoping, to everyone listening, happy new year. Hope it's a good one for us all.